The Adani Coal Company has promoted its very controversial project in Queensland as bringing two big public benefits: more jobs for regional Queenslanders and, I quote, "Adani is delivering on its promise to address power poverty for hundreds of millions in India." Well, is it? India has just cancelled plans for huge coal power stations because solar energy prices have hit a record low. India and China, as you may know, are being touted as climate icons because of their big push on renewable energy. We talked about China's situation a couple of weeks back. Well, today we have a couple of very interesting people to dissect where India is at. Don't forget, it's a country whose cities have some of the worst air quality in the world, but as you'll hear, the challenges are truly complex. Rahul Tongia is a fellow with Brookings India and an adjunct professor at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, where he spent many years. Hello, Rahul.
Hi.
And Dr. Radhika Khosla is a fellow at the Centre for Policy Research in New Delhi. She specialises in energy and climate change issues. Welcome to you, Radhika.
Hello.
Look, could I ask you both, first up, before we get into some of the detail, does India, in your view, deserve to be considered a climate icon? Radhika Khosla.
Yeah, thanks. So it's an interesting question, and there has been a sort of turnaround on the global perception of India, especially over the last few years from Copenhagen to Paris, where earlier on, India was seen much more as a problem case, in at least in terms of the global perception around India, to Paris, where it seemed much more as a front runner and almost a sort of villain to hero story. And I think that there is good reason for that. There's been a dramatic change in the powering of India from its different energy sources, and in particular, the renewables sort of engine has really taken off. And as you said in your introductory remarks, we're seeing this sort of very interesting change in the price of solar energy that has dropped from about 17 rupees per kilowatt hours in 2011 to 2.4 rupees per kilowatt hour, which is close to about 3 cents. So there is this large push and change within the energy system that India is seeing, and that's just one of the different things where you're seeing the country really making a push to mainstream climate change into its development process.
And Dr. Tongia, how would you see it?
Well, I wish that the world wouldn't look for icons as opposed to just actors, everyone doing the best they can. It's almost as if we're seeking saints and sinners, but the reality often lies in between. India, certainly, as Radhika mentioned, was viewed as a problem, but I think that was also a negative perception that's unfair, because India used to worry about who's to blame, and I would like to categorically state India has not been to blame. Yes, future growth of energy demand in India is very high, but India has not contributed to the majority or even its proportional share of greenhouse gases historically, because it has been, to use Mr. Adani's terms, in energy poverty. And so there was a lot of discussion prior to Paris about who's to blame leading you to pathways. And I think the remarkable thing about Paris, and India also did come around, which is important globally, is that it's not about who's to blame, it's about what do we do going forward. With that lens in mind, I think it's important to recognize India's ambitions and targets. Even before Paris, India had announced very ambitious renewable energy targets, 175 gigawatts from a base a little over 30, or around 30 gigawatts or 40, by 2022. So in just 5 years, India was targeting a 25% annual increase in renewable energy capacity, which is remarkable, especially for a developing country. You look at the targets announced by EU, China, or states within the US like California, which wants 50% renewables, but by 2030, not by 2022. All of those translate only into about a 4, 5, or 6% annual shift towards decarbonization, while India said we're going to grow by 25%.
Yes, so then let's come back to the Adani statements here, because it does, I think, help us understand the difficulty of assessing India's energy picture. And it's very controversial here, I'd like to tell you, with a farmer's petition against the promise of unlimited water supply, for instance, to Adani being just the latest backlash. And there are all sorts of other questions related to the viability of the project. But how valid is the claim that Indian people will benefit if the Adani mine can be set up? I mean, India's exporting its own coal, isn't it, Radhika?
Yes, and you know, I think it's important to just place that in a sort of larger context of where India actually sits in terms of its coal production. And there are a few things here just to note. So one is, like, very much like Rahul said, that, you know, there's a sort of a real push that India is making towards clean energy. And within that, just merely because of the low base of development that India is starting out from, it is going to need a lot more energy. And some of this is going to come from coal, irrespective of the large push that has been made in the renewable sector. But that's also to say that the sort of move towards coal isn't going to be as dramatic as we thought it would have been a few years ago.
But there is still a move towards coal, though. You're absolutely convinced of that, are you?
Well, yes, because the truth is that given the large number of transitions that are taking place, and I just want to give you a sense of what we're talking about, the demographic changes are such that 10 million to 12 million young people will be in the need of jobs every year. 300 million people do not have access to electricity, and a vast amount of infrastructure is still to be built. But having said that...
And I've just got to interrupt you, because there is a remarkable statistic that has completely knocked us back in our office that you might share with us about building construction. What's still to come, please?
That's right. That's right. And it is that it is estimated that 70% of the building stock in India that will be needed in 2030 is yet to be built.
Incredible.
And that is, it's unprecedented and it's incredible, as you say. So dealing with that and keeping in mind the challenge of India's development context does mean that India will need to pursue a number of different types of sources, and coal will be one of them. But having said that, even given the added coal, the projection suggests that per capita emissions in India in 2030 will be at about 4 to 5 tons per capita, which is still less than the current global average of 6.6 tons per capita. So keep it all in context, very much like Rahul was pushing us to do.
Yes. Now, in fact, Rahul, what is interesting, if I'm reading it correctly, is the involvement of the government here, that the Modi government has really tried to assure that private renewable developers feel a sense of stability, and they've got this payment security mechanism. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Well, to understand sort of why the center comes in or what is going on, we have to step back and look at the electricity scenario in India. It's a federal structure, and so distribution is at the state level. You have generation that could be central or state or private sector, but distribution is pretty much in the hands of states or state utilities, overwhelmingly public sector. These are the ones who are cash strapped. They actually lose money on average when they sell electricity, because partly because of theft or leakages, but also because the prices aren't, quote unquote, rational. And so investors coming in, private especially, who want to produce generation stations, not just renewable, but any type, their biggest worry is counterparty risk. Will I get paid on time? Will I have an offtake of my electricity? One of the other things, more than just financial, is, as Radhika mentioned, there's a lot of transition going on. In the old days, India used to be in deficit. A couple of years ago, coal was very scarce. Plants were importing much more or not running because of lack of coal. That has all changed. And now, for the first time in recent memory, if not ever, India is talking about being stable, if not surplus. I would think that the word surplus should be taken in context of when and where. Mm. So in the middle of the day or not at the peak, India does have sufficient capacity as per current payment ability by the DISCOMs, but that can change. And India's peak is actually in the evening. And that's a very critical fact to remember when we look at renewables growth. Renewables today are what we would call opportunistic renewables. You take them when you can, when the sun is shining or when the wind blows. But there are predictable periods when they don't perform. And that is one of the reasons coal is not going away in the near future.
So, Radhika, what I'm intrigued by is your work in cities, because you say that there's a window of opportunity right now as this huge shift to the cities goes on, all of this amazing building you're talking about, and that the real point of change is the way the shell of the buildings that are being built. This is your golden moment to actually ensure right now that you have a chance to stay in surplus or to keep some sort of stable energy generation. Now, how is that debate underway?
Yeah, so it's actually more than just the shell of the building. The point really is that the advantage for India is in the fact that its urban form, or that the structural networks of buildings, transports, streets, some of the longest living components of the economy are yet to be built. And these forms develop together. So the street and transport network develops together with buildings, and it induces a spatial pattern that endures for decades. And so there really is a moment where the choice of how these different elements of the city interact can be put together in a manner that sort of pre-shapes behavior. And the building shell is an important example there, because the way that the building shell is constructed determines how much energy will be needed to heat or cool the building for a long period of time. And we're talking decades. Sometimes buildings last even up to a century. And similarly for the transportation system. So, for instance, whether the infrastructure within a city is built for public transportation or for roads is going to determine how much distance is traveled, right, how the distance is traveled for a long time to come.
So do you believe, from your ability to forecast, that renewables will play the prime role or just a role in this amazing transition you're describing?
The targets for renewables are immense. So like Rahul was saying, the domestic target is even more stringent than the international target. The number is 175 gigawatts of renewable energy by 2022, which is over half of India's current capacity. And if India was to continue down this path, it's very likely, given the economics of how these things are playing out at the moment, that renewables will be driving the Indian economy for a long time to come, especially in the future, and juxtaposing that against the politics of coal. So as much as coal is important, it's also important to say that the concerns for the Indian economy are driven by multiple objectives. And those objectives...
Is that code? Is that a code, really, is it, about the fact that coal is also a very powerful political player as it is here?
It is powerful, but at the same time, there is a real concern around questions of energy security and coal imports, about the air pollution, the water pollution, the sort of social impacts of having coal-based power, and just having a clean environment, which includes climate change. Mm. And that politics is unfolding in a way which is not favorable to coal.
Okay. Can I just give Rahul a final word? How do you see this?
When people ask, is the future renewables, is the future coal, is the future efficiency, is the future smart grids? And the answer seems to be yes, it's all of the above. And I think it's the frameworks that'll really determine which grows disproportionately than business as usual. It's not going to be that renewables anytime soon are going to displace the baseload that coal provides, because, for example, India's peak right now in the grid is in the evening, and so solar has zero contribution at that
period. Unless you have battery storage.
Correct, unless storage technologies improve. So the growth is definitely much higher with renewables. It's attracting much of the capital, but that doesn't mean coal is going away. Mm. Yes, air pollution is a severe concern, but urban air pollution has many components, many causal effects. And so power plants can be cleaned up. I think the move towards not just now supercritical power coal plants, but ultra supercritical soon, hopefully, should make a big impact. And there's no reason India cannot comply with the most stringent air pollution norms that could be out there. So all of these factors can help keep coal, keep it relevant.
So to sum up, in terms of Adani's plans here in Australia, might our coal be an important part of India's energy future, Rahul?
I think one cannot comment on the balance sheet calculations that company makes without knowing them in detail. But it's not just the economics that drives companies to look at imported coal. Adani is not the first importer of coal in India. There are issues of predictability and quality that are drivers also for imported coal. So Adani's coal may not make sense for much of India. It may make sense for coastal India, far away from India's coal mines, because transportation is a significant component of costs from Indian coal.
How complicated. Thank you both very much indeed for that overview, Rahul Tongia and Radhika Khosla.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Radhika Khosla is at the Centre for Policy Research in New Delhi, and Dr. Tongia is a fellow at Brookings India.